Welcome to Inside the Frat House. I'm DJ Weeds. Joining me is the Muslim, Idra. We got In Control. This is the show where we talk about drinking beer, having parties, you know, things like that. And this is our first episode. It's going to be a good time, guys.
Yeah, man.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to Inside the Game. That one didn't last very long. We had the Muslim sit down, and then suddenly I was like, well, fuck. I can't go, like, I have OCD, and, like, something, one of these is not like the other. I have to go put my hoodie on. So, representing tonight here for episode 47 of Inside the Game. Thank you to the Muslim, who's going to be filling Pain User's spot for this week. How are you, sir?
Yeah.
Pretty good, dude. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Well, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. Idra, how's things going?
Pretty good. Got back from NASL like last night, so we're still on the come down from that, but fucking awesome event.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely going to talk a little bit more about that, both casting and the tournament and the other great tournament that took place there as well. In Control, how's it going?
Doing well. I think I've been traveling every single weekend for the last 4 weeks, so it's been a bit surreal, but still getting some games in and having fun, man.
It has been pretty rough schedule. This whole month has been absolutely insane. Got Summer Arena coming up this weekend, but then I'm taking a vacation, and I'm looking forward to that. Yes. I had a little one. My mom got married. Kind of weird, you know, being a son and going and watching your mom get married, but it was pretty cool. Their ceremony was like 15 minutes.
You know, like when you look at your mom, you know she's going to have sex that night.
I can't say in Control. Yeah.
Sorry, we...
That's the tone for the episode.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose, anyway. That's okay. So let's just kick things off right away. First and foremost, in what is undoubtedly going to be labeled as superior and fantastic journalism, you'll know here tonight on prior to or on Inside the Game, obviously, Pain User's not with us. Well, the Reddit thread went up immediately. Tonight's Inside the Game, the EG Lair, will feature EG's In Control, Idra, and the Muslim. Did you eat? Has replaced Pain User for good. So, there's your breaking news right there, ladies and gentlemen. Apparently, I didn't get the memo, but there it is. So, just wanted you guys to know that. NASL Season 3, watched it from the outside. You guys, of course, watching it from the inside, and in some cases, the best seats in the house. I'd love to just kind of dive into NASL. Guys, how was Canada, and how was Canada in esports?
Canada and esports was just absolutely amazing. They've been asking for events since like 2008. I think that's when MLG went there with Halo, and that was the last time they've had a major thing. And like, they earned it. They had that even on the first day, on the Saturday before the finals or anything. The place was just absolutely packed. Apparently, they sold an extra 1,000 tickets on top of that. I'm amazed they didn't actually have overflow Sunday. And it was the most enthusiastic crowd ever. I think if Chris had won, they might have actually rioted. Like, we were joking throughout the weekend, but I think that would actually be a possibility. They just were absolutely insane.
It kind of looked that way, to be honest with you. It really did look that way. That I mean, the crowd looked reminiscent of what I remember some of the very, very early MLG events. And so I know this is pretty early into the topic so far, but I have to say, is getting, like, a fresh location, reaching out to undoubtedly a huge amount of fans who will go to a live event if given the chance, is that potentially something that, you know, other events need to look at and not necessarily making the go around from year to year?
Absolutely. I think there's something to be said for returning to the same place, because it can become kind of like a tradition, and there's people that count on it, and you know, you can almost set your calendar to it. So there's definitely the advantage to that. But I think there's certain pockets of communities that were up until this point neglected. I mean, Canada has had tournaments at it, but they haven't been given like StarCraft II on this kind of a scale. And they delivered. So I'm thinking Vancouver's a good spot. I think Toronto definitely deserves some repeat action. And it goes a couple ways too here. I mean, like, if NASL has like season one glitches, you know, like the screen doesn't go on and they kind of misadvertise the event itself, so people are showing up at weird times or something like that. Like that could steal the limelight and make it really bad. But EG's hit, or not EG, well, we have two, I guess, but NASL has hit their stride. Like their issues that people will certainly talk about are legitimate and real, but they didn't detract from the live experience at all. And I think the online experience was fairly okay too. I don't think anyone's gonna like call in or message in and say, I turned it off because it was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life, you know, which is some of the stuff you'd hear in the past. So I really think NASL, by going to a new place and delivering the product they have, has really, they're just doing awesome work.
And, you know, most certainly, I've only attended the NASL Season 2 finals, but obviously many of us witnessed NASL Season 1, some of us firsthand. Yeah. However, the one thing that always, I won't lie, like, I felt bad because I felt like NASL Season 2 was set up to have all the right ingredients. It was just missing that, you know, overwhelming audience that, that, you know, got into the crowd introductions and was happy to be there. And although the people that were there were enthusiastic, I kind of feel like NASL really deserved to have that victory.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think season three is pretty, like, not to get too far away from your point, because I definitely agree with you. The season two offline finals were amazing. The red carpet idea, the booth, the new kind of booth where both the players are sitting in there amongst each other, having the casters kind of out amongst the audience as well really added a different flavor that I think you could almost say that DreamHack Stockholm perhaps borrowed a little bit from that. I mean, obviously they're not the first, NASL Season 2 Offline Finals was not the first time to ever have like a production stage amidst an audience, but it was one of the first times in StarCraft 2 at least. They did a lot of things really well there, but at the same time I don't want to let them off the hook too much because the way they planned their finals and the way they advertised it meant that they were almost always doomed to not have a very good audience. I think California is tough to get a huge audience, but it's definitely possible. And I think Anaheim kind of proves that. But season three, like I said, Canada, like we were talking about it across all the shows and they really delivered. So like for people that don't know, cause I guess they didn't mic the audience. Holy shit. They were so loud at the beginning. Greg and I had to like, just kind of shut up a couple times on the WCS stream because we were just like, well, I'm not going to scream over that.
For the first match, we literally could not hear each other while we were casting, and we were right next to each other, and we were like behind the stage, not anywhere near the actual audience. They were incredible.
I mean, one of the questions that people had about some of the sound issues, and I'd love to hear the relation of what people are experiencing online versus what you guys are experiencing, if anything, aside from it being really frickin' loud. Because they didn't have the audience mic'd in a weird way, it sounded like a lot of the, you know, you could hear the casters kind of in this loop. And I felt like they had a hard time controlling that. But within the venue, I did have one guy email me that said it was kind of muffled. Did you guys, you know, what'd you experience as far as that was concerned?
We spent most of our time backstage either watching from back there or casting. And it was really muffled back there, but I just kind of assumed, like, it's not supposed, it's designed to broadcast out to the audience. I heard about the online sound issues. I didn't hear anyone complain about it live, though.
Okay.
If anything, some of the funny complaints, I mean, we were kind of, you know, we're friends with Russ, so we were talking with him throughout the weekend. His biggest fear, actually, was that every person that bought a ticket would show up, LOL, because it would have put them over fire code, and they would have had, like, this situation where so many people showed up that they are literally overrunning the capacity of the building, which is a pretty nice issue to have, especially with the way it worked out, because that didn't end up happening, which is really standard for events. People buy, you know, buy tickets or get free tickets and then for one reason or another can't go or decide not to.
Sure.
But some of the issues, I guess, were because it was warm and there were so many people in this building, there's people that were like literally having a tough time staying comfortable with the heat, and people were getting headaches because it was so loud. I know a lot of people were throwing out their hips because they were dancing so much because Day 9 asked them to and shit. Like it was the issues were on the other end of the spectrum for
the best part about that was your chuckle at the end.
I want to make a sick prediction too, by the way. Okay. Not necessarily a prediction, but like a, I'm saying it right now. If someone wants some super awesome information, as cool as the Canadian audience is, and it's real, and I think they're going to do it every single time, I think the next big community to embrace an event is Australia. And I'm not just saying that. I really think
no, I think
amazing.
You're right, man. I think we're going to see it at the upcoming WCS Australia. I agree.
If they ever get, like, WCS is nice, but I'm saying, like, obviously not in any, like, an NASL, an MLG, something like that, something big, an IEM, something huge. I think that they would show up in droves. I think they would be hugely enthusiastic, and I think they would blow the roof off as well.
I can't imagine it actually being big enough to make it worthwhile, though. Like, the production costs of actually going down there and doing a show.
Yeah, that's what's forever going to be their problem. But if it ever happened, I think their audience is waiting, and I think they'd do a good job, too.
I would, like, go do anything there for free just for the opportunity to go to Australia. That'd be really cool.
I agree. It's one place that I have not ever been able to scratch off, hopefully, my bucket list eventually. But, I mean, really, like, can you imagine it? Like, you know, the players, they're getting ready behind the stage, and the crowd is just going ape shit. There's, like, kangaroos around you, and you know, there's guys throwing boomerangs, and suddenly Goatless comes out to the stage, and he's like, "Yeah, what's up, cunts?"
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah,
to that effect. And of course, the entire time, Land Down Under from Men at Work is playing, and I like this idea. I think Jeff has the next solid idea.
On to something, man.
Hire that guy. Let's talk a little bit about, well, actually, DeMuslim, how did you like Canada?
Well, from watching, it seemed really awesome. I mean, like, you talked about the sound issues. Like, I actually noticed myself, like, there was a lot of sound, kind of awkward silence parts. But
Right.
Like, I mean, not to, like, step on an ASL, because they've done, like, amazing from season one, season two to season three. I mean, this jump from season two to season three has, like, been phenomenal. Like, they've outdone themselves hugely. And, like, even throughout the season, I've, like, been watching as a player, even though I'm participating, I've been watching, like, every day pretty much, and it's just been absolutely wonderful. I'm so happy with what they've done. But, yeah, they still need to sort out the sound. I mean, from Greg and Jeff and everybody at the event saying, like, this has been the most wonderful audience ever. I mean, I saw stuff happening on the camera from, like, cool angles and stuff when they're all, like, making love heart signs, but actually hearing it, it just made the commentators sound really awkward, because there'd be, like, 10, 20-second pauses, and I guess that's because everybody's cheering, and I'm just like, this is really weird. Even to the point where Klitsch is doing some phenomenal, like, hey, this is, like, the best players in the world, come on out. Like, it was just silent, and it just felt really weird. So, yeah, I mean, these are very easy things to fix, and I mean, for NASL Season 4, I really look forward to those things being fixed.
By the way,
shout out to Klitsch, man. Like, he's the biggest victim of that. People can talk about NASL sound problems. It's like almost his own meme, but, like, Klitsch would be like, Stefano! And, like, the place is just blowing up, and it's like a fucking dance party going on. He's coming down like a rock star, but back at home, it's just this awkward silence. And
which is just, like, amazing to think. Like, if it's that loud,
Is it not
a bit surprising to think that you wouldn't hear some? But ambient noise can be difficult to pick up, especially without getting that repeat. It's just unfortunate, because as awesome as you guys who are there make it sound, I have to agree with DeMuslim a little bit.
It just came across like a little stale and like a little boring. And like when you watch, like, when I say sports on TV, you hear the crowd, you know, you watch a football game happen, like, World Cup, and, like, the crowd's getting hyped up behind every move and stuff. I mean, if there was just a little mic and you heard maybe, like, 5 or 10% of the volume actually going on, that would add so much excitement, and that's why you want to watch live games happen at LANs and stuff. That's why you want the crowds there, because they actually add so much excitement through them, like, you feel it through them, and I was just missing that a lot.
Yeah, we always talk about that with MLG arenas, how that's actually one of the big downsides. If you don't have a live audience, you don't have that excitement factor. So to then do a really good live show and not include it, it's just like an oversight. Yeah.
Well, to be fair, this is NASL's first time having a tough time miking the audience. Like,
this is their first time, like, having an audience and stuff.
It was like, how do we show all 15 people at one time? Okay.
Well, let's talk a little bit about it. I mean, a lot of content there. As far as the tournament was concerned, you know, I actually wasn't sure how much WCS we were actually going to see in between everything. But I think it worked out pretty good. Seemed that most people, at least when they could hear it, of course, online, were enjoying it, and the numbers were even doing pretty good. But let's talk a little bit about the main tournament before we go on and actually talk about the WCS. Let me bring the bracket up here. Any surprises for you? If we want to fast forward all the way to the finals, I had actually on my bad side of the list of NASL. The fact that I thought that the finals was just
terrible
was just kind of terrible. Yeah, I mean,
you know what? We're actually like 1/20th wrong. Yeah, like Greg just said, actually, all the series were terrible.
Even in the WCS games that I saw, at least, that was like the one problem with the event as a whole. Everything was great, except apparently the sound. But then the games were just pretty disappointing. Like, I don't know, not entertaining. Mostly pretty one sided. Yeah.
And I'll say this: like normally. A league's kind of at the mercy of the games, right?
Sure, always.
They don't hold the league that responsible, but I will say this to be critical of NASL. They are partly responsible. Their map pool is really bad, and it had like really bad maps still in rotation that no one's playing anymore. They did the responsible thing to remove Shattered Temple from the finals, but they
but
still
wasn't
had a few
enough.
Maps that... No, it wasn't enough. They needed more modern maps, and they had some really bad old maps that, like, everyone universally says, you know, this is a terrible map. Dual Sight.
Belshire.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. So that hurt a lot of the series, because a lot of the Protoss would either have Dual Sight or Belshire to deal with. They couldn't beat the both.
Actually, it's a good point in control. It is great. I'm going to go back. I went from great, good, back to great. I'm recalling... an MLG, I think, I'm going to say early 2011 or really late 2010, where the map pool was kind of shifting. I mean, at this point, keep in mind, guys, like, you know, some of the smallest maps were still being played, and we've forgotten about those. But in the grand scheme of things, do you think that, A, they need to make a conscious effort to change this up? Because... when we had this tournament, this MLG tournament, with, another quote-unquote bad map rotation, where it just wasn't fitting well into the metagame at all either, the result, I remember the games being really, really just not that fantastic, and it just kind of being a lackluster competition. You believe that was really a large reason for...
Well, I think one of the problems is, like, maps used to be a gigantic issue. Leagues kind of across the board did a really shitty job of updating their maps and picking really balanced maps. Like, map pools were a huge issue. But actually, I would say in the last 6 months or so, maps have been really good in tournaments, including MLG. Like, competitions have had less of a storyline of, like, oh, God, you have to dodge the three or four bad maps in this map pool. So when NASL does a really poor job of that, it sticks out to me as a sore thumb, because it's something that everyone else is kind of being very proactive about, but NASL is behind the curve on.
Yeah, like, if you looked at the Puzzle vs. Ret series, Puzzle's PvZ on Daybreak, which is a modern good map that every tournament uses, it just looked absolutely incredible. He completely controlled the game. He had some of the best grass we've ever seen. He had, like, four Phoenix alive the entire time, all with 20 kills. He played absolutely incredibly. Then the next game was on Dual Sight, and he just does this terrible, like, two Void Ray unupgraded Link, like, Warp Gate all in, and just gets rolled over because it's a terrible map that Protoss doesn't have any chance on. And there were so many maps in the pool that encouraged that, just... we almost required bad all-ins from Protoss because they weren't set up for the long macro game. And it's like, it definitely brought the game quality down a lot. And it forced Protoss to play outside their comfort zone. You can only, like, there were only two or three long macro games in the whole thing that I can really think of. Everything else was Protoss trying to do a three base all-in. And against a player like Stefano, that's what he's absolutely incredible at. So, of course, he destroyed all of them. Like, the maps definitely pulled it
right. Away. Right. Well, let's kind of talk about that. Kind of play off of that a little bit, Greg. Stefano wins it. He wins it 4-0 in the finals. Going back to our original point, you know, looked great throughout the tournament in terms of just winning the matches that he needed to win. But expand on that point. I mean, are you gonna say that maps was basically one of the major reasons for the win, or do you think that, you know, Stefano, who has definitely had some roller coaster rides here over the last couple months, do you think that he, you know, came to win this?
I don't want to say it in a way that takes away from Stefano's win, because he played brilliantly, and he absolutely deserved to win, especially against Alicia in the finals. That was just, like, Alicia had the upper hand a lot of times. Stefano just knew exactly what to do to force Alicia's hand. Definitely. Or to get himself back into her way. Like, Stefano played absolutely great. But, yeah, if you look at the Protosses, a lot of the times, Hero, it's Antigua, so Antigua is like a modern map that gets used, but Hero absolutely hates Antigua, so he had a massive advantage after his cannon rush, but he didn't want to play out the game because he doesn't like it, especially against Stefano. So he just does a terrible two-base all-in into Infestors and Spinecrawlers and gets destroyed. And so many other games. I think the Puzzle vs. Ret series is the best example of it. Like I said, on Daybreak, he played a long, drawn-out macro game. He played it really well, and he won. And then he just does bad all-ins, like a two-Stargate Void Ray and Void Ray Warp Gate and all that kind of stuff. It was making Protosses uncomfortable. It was making them play styles that aren't as effective and that they aren't as comfortable with, because that's just not the current state of the game. And, yeah, it definitely hurt them quite a bit, held them back. Another thing was the brackets. Like, I don't think anyone really expected Alicia in the finals, and I don't think his PvZ is as good as Puzzles or Heroes, so that kind of detracted from it, too. Like, I think Stefano versus Hero or Puzzle in the finals would have been a much better match.
Yeah. The Muslim is the Terran of the show. How did it feel to only see one Terran amongst the top eight and then that one Terran to fall?
It sucked. Like, as an observer, I really wanted to watch Puma, like, not only as a teammate, but as a Terran. Like, that's the race I find the most fun to watch. So to watch him go out, like, 3-0 pretty much straight away to MC, and MC was arguably, like, top two of the tournament, like, in terms sure. of playing ability. Like, it was really unfortunate for him to meet him. But, yeah, I mean, the tournament from that point on was just PvZ, like, every match. And for me, that was pretty stale. Like, it was Stefano doing, no offense to him, he was doing the exact same build, and the build worked pretty much every time. And, yeah, it was just watching Protosses get slaughtered. Nothing much more to say than that. But, I mean, like, before then, there was, like, six Terrans in the top 16, so, I mean, NASL was pretty cool up until the finals.
I think one thing to kind of go off that point a little bit, I guess I'm detracting, is, like, I really feel like NASL should have done a little bit more of a better job to, and they had a responsibility to do this, to represent those that were in their top 16, because, I don't know, I mean, I guess it's kind of a weird, I can hear my own argument against this point, because it's like, well, where do you draw the line, because the top 16 is just as arbitrary as the top 32, I guess, but for most tournaments, top 16 is where the championship, you know, like, that's where the final players are, I guess. I don't know. It was a little bit interesting because a lot of people were kind of losing sight of what an accomplishment it was to go through that field of players and make top 16. But because the offline final was only eight players, they were the only ones talked about all of NASL finals.
I was gonna bring that up because, you know, and although we mentioned that the WCS content did come out, that did mean that a few matches, well, quite a few, were actually sacrificed, about as many as were actually played. Did you feel like this attracted overall away from the story as well? Because I always felt like that was one thing that the NASL event did very good. Bring all these guys into presentation, follow the story along throughout the competition. And that story, like, it's like, yeah, your story's great. We're going to need to remove, like, three chapters from it. You know, well, that sucks. It's not going to be as good as it could have been. So, I mean, I can agree with you on that point a little bit.
They did try to compensate that for that. They knew it was a problem. They had big intro videos with Frodan doing a bunch of hype for all the players.
Right.
You're right. It's just not as good as actually showing the story.
Those could, I mean, I don't know. It's a little bit too nitpicky, but I felt like those could have been done better too. Like, the first time I saw it, it was really cool because Frodan has a lot of passion and it looked unscripted and I liked the camera angles. I thought the way they did it production-wise was beautiful. But content-wise, every one of the videos only really showed, like, one or two series. And I think their defense is, well, they're just showing the series that got them into the top eight. Mm-hmm. But to your guys' point, I would have liked to have seen, like, a longer video that shows their highlights and their top, you know, their journey there and the story. I think that would
have
been really cool.
They did that for season one, right? And it was really cool. Yeah. Like, you got to see every series.
Yeah, the problem
was
awesome. Then you saw it every single time they played.
Yeah, just show it
remember.
Once. Just show
yeah,
it once.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or just a more overarching one, you know? I mean, I don't. I missed it. So if there was a pregame show per se, I didn't see it. But even that's, you know, even that's a step in the right direction. That can be a tough thing to do. Gather footage over the course of a season, like, you know, and NASL, they are always so open to criticism. So, you know, Russ, Mark, et cetera, team, if you happen to be watching, start logging that shit at the beginning of season four. And then at the end, it becomes really easy because you've logged and you're like, this is going in, this is going in. At least you have it out. That's kind of how
I'm sure they will. They actually had more content than time to show it.
They did.
Cool,
they did.
Mr. Bitter was telling me. I mean, they were running so well that they had a few interviews they ran just to kind of pass the time. I mean, including David Ting and Sundance, which I think, by the way, is really cool for a league to give a little
sweet
bit of space to another league. That looks so powerful to me. Like, I mean, when I say powerful, I guess what I'm trying to say is you come off as the good guy and you're able to say, like, look, we're helping the community. I don't want to make it sound like it was like purely some evil plan from NASL, but it's a good thing for a league to do because it makes them look strong.
Yeah.
Anything else that you guys want to mention about the actual games of NASL? Not necessarily WCS, but specifically NASL. As the Muslim side, I heard this as well. You know, PVZ, for some, they don't like it at all. They don't care about it. And
it hurts the league.
The lack of diversity did kind of suck. I think that's going to bring us to another issue that we're going to talk about in a little bit. But
at least it wasn't ZVZ PvP. That would have been. I mean, we kind of lucked out that most of them were PVZs. Like, can you imagine a bunch of PVPs or a bunch of ZVZs? It would have been like the worst tournament ever.
Everyone else just leaves and makes me and Mr. Bitter cast it because no one else.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, so what did you guys think of Tribes? Did you watch it? Did you catch it at all?
It looks like it could. It looks like it could actually be really fun to play. Like, I was talking to people there who had some experience with it, and they said it's really, really skill based, and there's lots of little things you can do to be good at. Sounds like the kind of game that would be fun to play, but there's just like no readability at all. If you don't understand it, you can appreciate any skill. It's a terrible spectator thing.
Yeah, from watching it, like the camera kept zooming out to like a billion miles away, so I just saw little people flying around. It might as well have been Quidditch, you know? Like, like
fucking
broomsticks. I had no idea what was going on.
You're the second person who has actually called it Quidditch-isk to me.
That's actually
talking about too.
That's fucking brilliant. I love that.
I bet Tribe suffers from some of the similar problems that StarCraft does. Like, probably to a greater extent, though, because I knew nothing about it going into it. And it was fun to watch in the sense that they were moving really fast. But, like, there'd be a random guy in a tank, and he gets shot. Everyone that picked up a flag seemed to just kind of die 2 seconds after. It was people, like, it looked kind of like a bad DayZ mod in the sense that their feet would just kind of, like, chomp, and then they're, like, skiing down a hill going 50 miles per hour, and they'd chomp, and they're, like, flying. It just didn't make sense. But the people that did know stuff about it, like Clutch had played a bunch, and a few of the other guys, they loved it. They were really getting into it. And it was a great final, and it was really highly skilled. And I think, I guess where I'm trying to draw the comparison is if I knew more about it, I bet it would be fucking fantastic to watch.
But isn't that a bigger issue with the spectator games of today?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's unfortunately one of the problems, is that if you don't have a way for it to translate into something that someone could enjoy, there could potentially be issues, and I think that's kind of what we're dealing with here a little bit. But I agree. Like, I'm a fan of Tribes, so I, you know, quite enjoyed it. But I wish that we had first person view. It's kind of weird. Like, it's really hard to understand the 3D space in Tribes when you don't have a first person view and not like a static lock to your head a little bit. So, that's a bit strange. But anyway, I just wanted to ask if you guys had seen it. Let's see. So season four starts in September, end in December. I guess this is sort of the official, unofficial announcement. The dates weren't as specific, but it's good to see them. You know, they've got this nice sort of, pace going.
I mean, they're doing great. They're picking up new sponsors. They're really happy financially. Everyone seems to be doing well. They're hiring more people. They're building bigger stuff. I can't tell what I was told in private or not, so I'm going to try to be vague. But like, they're getting bigger. I mean, I think the Rotterdam, the Rotter and Bitter duo is really, really good for them. I think everyone's happy with that. I think it's cool because a long time ago we were kind of like, you know, give us a chance, let us try, because it'd be really good to have another league. And now, you know, almost just 1 year later, which is really not that long of a time, we're talking about another league. And, you know, I made a comment in my interview with GameSpot, I believe, where I said, shout out to Slasher, by the way, where I said that it would be nice to have another league that rivals an MLG. And a lot of people kind of nitpicked it and were like, well, it's two different things. They're daily content. MLG's this, that, the other thing. I agree with all those points. The analogy is a little bit off. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is I think everyone benefits from another league. You can look forward to producing a great set of content and more competition.
I think the turnaround is the coolest part of NASL because Season 1, Season 1 is supposed to be rocky, but Season 2, everyone was getting kind of fed up with them. There was lots of problems. The viewership was down. They weren't really being all that successful. And then Season 3 comes around, and all of a sudden, everything has just gone way up. They took all of the criticism to heart, and they fixed a lot of it. And you know, they were rewarded. Everyone started watching, and they were getting 8,000, 9,000 viewers a day, even for just regular matches. And then this finals is the culmination. And if they keep going up like that, like Jeff said, they're adding new people. They're really good at taking criticism and working on it and fixing it. You know, I was really impressed with them. I think it'll only keep getting better.
Well, in addition to what we saw, of course, in the main competition, NASL also featured WCS. And before we do talk about that, I do want to mention this article that was posted on ESFI World. And it's just a nice little reminder, I guess you could say, that the NASL Season 3 Finals pushed StarCraft II earnings over $5
million. That's awesome.
According to the SC2Earnings.com webpage, this does, of course, include, I think, just about any sort of registered, paid competition.
Yeah.
And they also have the StarCraft II 100K Club, which only has one Protoss in it, believe it or not. MC.
How big is that? It's like six people now?
No, it's MC, MVP, Nesty, MMA, DRG, Marine King, Stefano, Polt, Puma, Fruitbula. This must be of all time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of all time.
Fruit Dealer hasn't won a dollar for like 2 years.
All
so,
time. Yeah, it's got to be. He's like, dude, Greg, you don't know about $1. His underground money match ring that he's got going on, Greg. He's Fruit Dealer, man. He's got to make the bills. That's pretty fucking awesome. $5 million globally, if we start counting, you know, in the early days of some of the paid competitions, that is not too shabby.
By the way, before we get too far from and we could talk about this more in WCS as well. I know you've like totally sold out to EG, so it's like a completely EG biased show, but you know what? We gotta talk about Huck at NASL.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to fluff the shit out of this, and Slasher's going to, you know, he's going to make his little tweets.
Okay. All right, let's do that. Before we talk about WCS, it sounds like you've got something prepared, maybe.
I just know the guy, and I was there. It was really hard. He worked harder for this tournament than any other tournament before, and he'll say that. He has said that, and we watched it. He was watching VODs every night of all of Alicia and Scarlet and Osage and the players he thought that in WCS would give him a tough time. He worked really hard. He had two accounts, number one and two on NA, as well as, you know, playing his fair share of customs and just doing what he needed to do, he felt, to practice. So it's hard because he also kind of he gets a lot of criticism as well, where, you know, people kind of throw out like, well, he's not getting the results he used to, which was like, you know, top 8 code S. So it's kind of hard to maintain that, but it was really hard to be there because everyone was pulling for him so bad, including all of Canada. And I'm not even just saying that. Like,
was there more pressure on Huck as a result of that?
Oh yeah, for absolute. I mean,
like, really, that was the hype.
With the fucking flag on his shoulders, man.
Well, I mean, even leading up to the event.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of my sob story about the top 16. Like, he actually almost didn't make it in. He was down 0-2 to Gonzi, was he not?
Yeah.
And he came back to win 3 straight games to beat a Code S level Terran that's absolutely freaking amazing. And he makes it in to play in his home country in front of basically his family, his friends, and everyone important to him. And he's playing Alicia. And I'll tell you why Alicia is one of the worst opponents you could face. It's because for some fucking reason, everyone counts Alicia out. Like, he's just constantly underrated and just People are like, Alicia. And I have a sneaking suspicion part of it's his name, by the way. It's like not an intimidating name. If his name was Soul Crusher 17 or some shit like that, people would think Alicia's the number one Protoss on the planet. But his name
like,
is...
it's Alicia. Like, what do you...
Yeah. Well, he's also like the nicest, friendliest little guy. You see him standing up on stage, and he's just kind of grinning, and he doesn't know what to do. He looks like really shy and out of place. He looks unintimidating. Absolutely.
Dude, the only thing... I'm sorry, Alicia, but the only thing I can think of... And I'm sure I can't find it. But if you guys remember from GSL where they made him wear all that bad
makeup. Oh, yeah. Everyone looked terrible in that.
It's like, it's the only thing I can think of every single time I hear Alicia. I'm sorry, Alicia.
So I guess to finish my point, like, you could tangibly feel the sadness and the frustration because Alicia won those games pretty hard. He's an amazing player, and then just by nature of the way the tournaments work, when you have WCS at the same time as either an MLG or an NASL, you have to get up and go play other guys. And Canada has really underrated players, like Huck barely survived Jay Echo, who's this awesome up-and-coming Zerg. He overcame Tubby the Fat, LOL, and then Scarlet, who would eventually go on to drop one map the entire time, kind of dominate him, so... It's a tough tournament, and poor Huck got bashed around a little bit.
Yeah, like, we can totally sympathize with him on the WCS plus NASL thing, like the same happened at Anaheim. You lose the match, you get knocked out of a tournament, and then literally 10 or 15 minutes later, after getting 3-0'd by Alicia up on stage, he had to go play TT1 in the loser bracket, like, to be eliminated from the tournament. And TT1's not a bad player at all. And playing in those conditions, just, like, you can't do that as a competitor. It takes more time to recover from a match that's psychologically damaging. And I don't know, it's so hard to do that as a player. It was really unfortunate for him that it lined up like that.
Yep.
Obviously the fans upset. To Muslim, any tears shed there at the EG Lair?
Well, it was sad for me just watching because I actually got to watch the games. Like, his first round match in the WCS was Tubby the Fat, and he actually beat him in a tournament a few weeks prior. So he was like, the problem with WCS, or in fact, not the problem, the nice thing for, like, viewers, you get to see people that nobody have ever heard of. They're actually pretty good. Come and shine, you know? Like, there's people like Jekko, Scarlet. While people may have heard of them, people don't really know how good they are. So for people like Huck, the big favorite going into this, everybody's got a massive chance against him. Like, people may think, like, Huck's going to dominate everybody, but that's not the case at all. So him playing Tubby the Fat first round, like, just winning 2-1, like, the games were pretty close. Then playing Scarlet second round, losing 2-0. Playing Alicia, losing 3-0. Like, the tournament's hard. And it was sad to see, because we all saw how hard he worked. And, like, he'd been playing hundreds upon hundreds of games in, like, a very short period of time. But, it's kind of gut-wrenching, because we all know how good these players are that he's playing. But nobody else really does. So they see Huck as failing, but really it's just... Canada's a really good country. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, it was another thing. It's kind of unfortunate that he got Scarlet so early on, because everyone knew Scarlet was good going in, but she didn't know she was, you know, drop one map the entire time.
Yeah.
And so he gets 2-0'd by her, and that's like, well, shit, I got 2-0'd by this player who's good, but, you know, I'm better than her. And then it turns out she is actually just going to dominate the tournament, so that messes with you as well.
Yeah, she, like, people knew she was good, but they still were only citing her IPL performance, and then the TAC, they're like, that was pretty cool too. But actually, having seen her play in person, she really reminded me of Nurcio. Like, just defensive, good passive play. I mean, I guess where she's different from Nurcio is she has some fucking swagger, man. She was dancing ultras and lings and shit, and
waving to the crowd, like, as she was winning.
The funniest scary thing to play, yeah.
As she was beating Drubi up on the backstage, she was just, like, constantly looking over and watching the match. I forget who it was. I think it might have been MC Red or something. The match that was going on the main stage, like, while she was beating him.
Took her hands off the keyboard, really, too, and just kind of sat back. She was so far ahead.
What do you guys think about that?
I think it's awesome. It's funny.
Awesome. Like, nobody likes to have that done to them. So maybe, you know, MLG Raleigh, Greg sitting here goes, it's fucking stupid, and I do the same thing. I don't know. But as a spectator to watch that, and then she shook their hand afterwards. Like, so it was very much, it felt a lot like the Korean showmanship. Like, she was definitely doing it to kind of make it more excited. She wasn't doing it to, like, completely disrespect her opponent or something like that. In her interview, she didn't then go like, yeah, Drewby's garbage, I hate the guy. She was just like, I asked her actually point blank, and I feel honored because I was one of the two people she talked to that entire weekend.
You were her mouthpiece.
I was her mouthpiece for a while. I was her Hodor, actually, now that I think about it. But, It was really, really cool because she was just kind of like, I don't know. Like, why'd you do that? I don't know.
Why not?
Why not? Yeah.
I mean, I know this is hard to predict for, you know, for any player, whether they come out, you know, they win this tournament, they win these online cups. There's no doubt about it. You kind of said it yourself that Scarlett has a little bit of swagger. Like, you know, obviously qualifying for the WCS in a major way. Like, do you see Scarlett really making a big hit here in 2012 to finish up and potentially into 2013? What do you guys think?
Certainly. Any player who comes out and, like, makes their breakthrough at an offline event, that's, like, half the struggle down. She can perform offline, it seems, just as well as she can online, and that's a huge thing. And then she is actually just legitimately really good. Like, she's beaten CODESS players at LAN before.
Right.
She went through a tournament where she was better than pretty much everyone, and she just won it like she was supposed to. There's a lot of signs that she's going to be really, really good.
One of the biggest ways you can tell a winner is, like, when Stefano is playing for $30,000, he looks uninterested and kind of bored and just, like, a little bit deathly. Scarlett has that same kind of feel to her. Like, she doesn't look intense. She's not making mistakes. She's not freaking out. She's just playing any other game she ever would. And that's something special because that's, I don't know what they, like, there must be some powerful drugs out there. I don't know what the hell is going on, but they just look like they don't care. And for the rest of us, or for a lot of us, I guess I would say, those games are like taking your breath away. Your heart's going a million miles per hour. It's really hard to stay focused.
And any comments on Astoji's play, Idra?
He's just another pretty good Zerg. Like, it's cool he made the finals. It's cool he's starting to get a little bit more in terms of offline performance because he's always been better online than offline. He's a relatively new player to competition. So hopefully for him this is a sign of things to come. He's kind of getting over nerves and whatnot. Nothing too special. I mean, Scarlett beat him pretty hard, but he was the one person to take a game off her in the third round throughout the entire tournament, so there's something to say for that.
She made up for it, though, in the last series.
Yeah, that she did.
Was the crowd as into the WCS content as they were into the NASL content?
The crowd cheered for Tribes. The crowd
really loud.
Okay, so they were like, we don't care what it is.
They were just fucking happy all weekend. Like, it did not matter.
They broke out in the national anthem. They were randomly making heart signs. They were really cool. Greg and I lined up, or actually Greg and I had a signing, and we got to feel super special because Greg and I kind of talked about this, and you know, we get good audiences at MLGs. People want our autograph. It's really cool. It feels very awesome. But in Canada, we felt a little bit like Tastosis. Like, we went over there to get an autograph, and the line lined up around the building.
And kept adding to it. Like, we went through...
Yeah.
I think we were there for 40 or 50 minutes of just constantly signing.
Great. Now everyone's going to be like, oh, look, pro players become casters and suddenly they gain popularity. I'm glad, you guys.
No, it was awesome. I think it was the venue, the fans and whatnot. They were just the most enthusiastic audience I've ever seen.
Everything was love is the point we're trying to make. Like, absolutely everything.
I had one additional. No. Actually, it was going to take us into our next thing. This graphic came up today, and with the having a Zerg winner for the last event, this graphic says events since the Queen buff, and so some interesting stats that we're about ready to take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
The result source was Liquipedia, and you know, it's got monthly tournaments listed there. So it's got a little bit of online thrown in there. The World Championship Series, which, of course, is Blizzard's own competition. Zerg, Protoss, Terran. Okay. Now we're getting to the major tournaments where we actually see Protoss doing pretty well. Oh, look at that. The Terran makes an appearance there. GESL is Zerg City. Spring Arena, also Zerg City. NASL Season 3 looks a little Zerg City. And so it breaks it down and gives us totals.
GESL.
Winner, 8 Terran, excuse me, 8 Protoss, 3 Terran, 24 Zerg wins. I mean, you know what? We've talked so much about this and that and OP and but at one point, data's really got to be your sort of main source for trying to evaluate things. What's going on, guys? I want to hear your thoughts on this. I feel like I'd love to hear some insight. And since Taryn is represented by three, the Muslim, let's start with you, man.
I mean, the statistics are pretty... I don't really know what else to say. Like, three winners out of... How many tournaments is that? Like, 40? That's pretty huge that Taryn's winning, like, three tournaments.
35, Ben.
Okay, 35 tournaments. Taryn won less than 10% of them. That's pretty big. And, I mean, this is since the Queen buff. Like, this is the most... Well, this is pretty accurate. This is just pretty bad. It's pretty bad. I don't really want to complain that much, but yeah, Zerg's really strong right now, and there's not much for Taryn to do. And I mean, the Taryn wins, you have to remember, some of these are for WCS, so this is like Major going through Mexico, where there's like only him that plays the game, so yeah, some of these are skewed.
Okay. Idra, 24 wins, man, is it just the Brotherhood doing well, or what?
That includes stats from right after the patch, and we've always talked about how that's always going to inflate.
Absolutely.
Whatever race gets buffed.
Absolutely.
And there are a lot of minor tournaments, like Ben said, where Zerg's won those two, not just a Terran or two. So that inflates it. But yeah, Zerg's doing really well right now.
Working as intended. Jeff, represented on this graphic.
They're not making enough Ravens. You know, like, you gotta make more Ravens.
Raven is the most OP unit in the game. Why do you not
troll, Ben? If you actually get an emotional response from that, then...
No, just the big sigh, the big sigh.
So silly. You know, I mean, like, I've been kind of pretty outspoken about this. Like, in the past, I've come out and been really, really complaining about balance. And what I'm trying to do is be more subjective, and I look at this and I say, it's really bad, obviously. I don't think anyone's going to look at those numbers and be like, Terrence, start trying hard enough. Or I'm still waiting for the best argument, which is my favorite, that does come around. One of the three hosts here did make this argument.
Uh-oh.
It's my favorite. That is that the better players play that race.
Who said that?
They've been saying that about Terrence for a long time. Like, everyone's just like, yeah, the best players play Terrence. Okay. Which is a...
Well, historically, I'm not sure if it's me or Ben who said that before, but historically, Taryn has been winning at like 60%. So if we then assume that that's because the race was overpowered and then all the Taryn players are actually worse, so now the game is balanced and they're supposed to be winning less, and Zerg has statistically done the worst, so we were actually the more skilled players, so we are supposed to be doing better now that the game is balanced.
Fine.
So it all makes sense.
Plus they know those fucking new spider mines in Heart of the Swarm are going to completely tip those scales, so...
Yeah, so let's have a couple of months of wins.
They're buffering it. Yep.
When did the patch go in?
Good question. I'll have to wait
for the stream chat. Give him about 10 seconds here.
Let's see. Patches. Beep, pop, pop. I'm going to look on Liquipedia. Beep, pop, pop. Oh, shit. Let's see. Was it 143? Yes.
3 months?
Was it 3 months?
That's pushing it, in my opinion. I think there should be about a... I don't know. I think you're just on the line. Right.
I'd be curious to see a TVZ win rate like graph over time of that period, because I think Terrans are figuring out it is getting better. At first, Terrans just did not win at all, like we saw in the GSTL. Like, you could not send a Terran against a Zerg. I think it is getting better, but obviously still Zerg favored, statistically.
Really Zerg favored?
Statistically.
Is it really the Queen, by the way? Is it all the Queen?
I can tell you, pretty much. Okay, you know how there's like risk or reward. You like play greedy. You're obviously susceptible to a lot of things, like all ins and what have you. If you open three Nexus, if you get all in, you're gonna die. A lot of the like risk reward kind of thing is gone for Zerg. A lot of it is like, okay, there's no risk but a lot of reward. And to counteract that for Terran, there's a lot of risks you have to take in order to kind of stay even. Whereas if an all in happens or any kind of attack, you're gonna die. Whereas there's a lot of attacks that you try and do against Zerg, even if you know he's playing risky or greedy, that doesn't really work out. So Taryn against Zerg, there's a lot of coin flipping. But given that they have the opportunity to kill you if they really want to, then, yeah, Taryn doesn't have that choice anymore. So
okay. So given what Ben just said, I put it through my brain real quick, and I've come up with the answer. You ready?
Ghosts revert back to their original cost, 100 minerals, 200 gas. They do 50% more damage to Massive from the nerf. It's the most confusing way to say that they revert back the nerf 50%. And the Reaper has a grenade specifically made for the Queen called the Cerebral Bore. They throw it up in the air. Okay, wait for it. Goes into the brain of the Queen and explodes its head. One shot kill. They only get one, though.
Or we just teach Terrans that Six Queen is actually a defensive build, not a greedy build, because you're spending 600 minerals on defensive units. But, no, the other thing, too.
Yeah.
900.
Hmm? Four, six, no, because there's four additional Queens.
Right, but the whole... You have defend with all six.
Yeah, but you already have the initial two.
Yeah, but it's no
it's
cost.
Not interesting,
it's like,
but yeah, that actually makes your... That's more income, or more minerals into defense, so it's like...
But 900 minerals to say I can play as safe as I want up to 70, 80 drones for no kind of like, hey, that's pretty broken.
Well, can I go back to Jess?
You do anything you want at the same time.
What can I go back to Jess' question, which, you know, is it the Queen? So, the Muslim, if they even took down the range again, and we've kind of talked this before, but we'll get your opinion on it. If they took down the range again, do you think that that would actually have an immediate effect? Or do you think now the metagame's been changed so much that it wouldn't even matter?
It definitely would have an effect. Hellions, say in the numbers like 4 to 6, that was like a pretty common number. They could actually battle Queens. Creep spread couldn't be pushed as well as it can now. If you have three Queens sat on the very edge of creep, ready for the tumors to spread, they get two volleys off on a Hellion, and it's down to like roughly half health. That's the main problem, that creep is just kind of unstoppable, and what lies behind it, you have no idea as a Terran. So it's like a massive unknown game, you don't know what's going to come at you, you have to play safe, or do you play greedy? If you play greedy, you're going to die, if you play safe, you're also going to die later on. I'd like to see something happen with Ravens, or Ghosts, or Queens being like, back to how they were.
Did you just say Ravens?
Yeah.
Terrans don't make ghosts anymore, so you could do that. That would be a change.
Could be.
There's so many things that Zerg are capable of doing with the six queens. And I mean, I don't know how that would affect ZVP. After watching Stefano, in fact, every time I watch Stefano against the Protoss, I always think, wow, there's a problem here. I'm only like capable of speaking really thoroughly about TVZ, and TVZ is really hard. I mean, when Ghost did 45 damage with snipes and stuff, I was like fully open about saying, hey, Ghosts are really broken right now. There's nothing that Zerg can do once I hit late game.
But then you realize you fucked up.
Yeah, I fucked up.
They really took the
They got nerfed, they got removed, and then it was like, Okay, Terrans had problems for a while. Then it started turning into an even game again, and TVZ was like the most watchable matchup, or at least one of the most balanced matchups in the game, which is really cool. And then the Queen change happened, and you know, I was speaking to some of the Blizzard guys at WCS UK, and I said, like, hey, what's going on? Because like, everybody was kind of giggling about it, you know? And they said the changes that they've done now are ready for Heart of the Swarm. They're not really ready for this stage of where the game's at right now. So that made sense to me. And if Heart of the Swarm comes out and these changes are the same and stuff and the game is balanced, then I'm cool with that. But I think it was a bit preemptive bringing out the changes right now if the game wasn't ready for it.
Someone should make like a Terminator-themed like teaser video for Heart of the Swarm for Terran. Like, having awesome Zerg. Hasta la vista. And it just shows like the fucking mech army rolling.
Can
through.
You do a Schwarzenegger impression? Benjamin? What?
That's what Arnie does all the time.
What?
Have you never heard that?
Can you just say, I'll be back?
No, it's just like...
What? Can you just give us an I'll be back, please?
I'll be back.
Said, I'll be black.
I pretty much did. I messed it up.
Oh, okay. All right. We've got a lot more WCS action coming up, continue on to this weekend and further and further. So we'll continue to kind of just be discussing that. But congratulations, NASL, WCS Canada. Sorry I couldn't be there. Looked like it was awesome. Canada, you definitely showed them what's up. We'll see if MLG will follow. Let's talk a little bit about Actually, we could take a break here and then come back and touch some of this other stuff. Let's do that. Let's take a quick break. When we return, we'll continue on, talk a little bit about upcoming MLG Arena, TSL4 Quals, the MMA Slayer stuff, which was kind of interesting. And I think Princess has a question that he wants me to ask as well. So we'll get to all that and more. Thanks for joining us on Inside the Game. We'll be right back with another hour after this. Don't go away, guys. We're back. It's time for our second hour here. I'm Inside the Game, episode 47. And talk a little bit about NASL. A lot about NASL, actually, in the first hour. Let's kick things off. Talk a little bit about the MMA and Slayer stuff. Very, very interesting sort of series of events that kind of comes out here. And I don't know if anyone knows all of the details. But as it sounds... It was reported that MMA was, I guess you could say, demoted. Is that the word?
Yeah.
People That's are using? The word they're using.
Yeah. Demoted to the B team. Of course, this comes with a lot of rumors that perhaps MMA is looking to join a foreign team, which, you know, wouldn't be the first time we've seen a Slayer member leave and join a foreign team. But... You know, MMA, certainly one of their superstars, definitely a topic worth discussing. Again, I think you can only speculate, like, what this would mean. You know, Greg, you've been on a pro team in Korea before, probably seen promotions and demotions before, but have you ever seen a punishment handed out that actually puts someone onto a quote-unquote lesser team?
Well, yeah, that's what happened with Koka after the cheating scandal, the thing with Byun. In the Arm League, he was sent home, sent to the... I'm not sure if he was even officially a B-teamer, but yeah, he wasn't allowed to be in the house for that time. And I don't want to say it's a regular disciplinary measure, because Korean teams are usually so like well-behaved and respectful and submissive that they don't have to take disciplinary measures, but yeah, it happens. Although, for it to happen to a superstar, like when it happened to superstars in StarCraft 1, it was generally them being sent to the B-team, but still staying in the house, just like as an added motivation, a fresh start, try and fix their mindset because they were performing poorly, not as a behavioral thing.
The Muslim in control, any comments on this?
I'm just massively surprised. Slayers, MMA Slayers, like, he's pretty much the face. For the longest period of time, he was like the first Slayers player winning tournaments, and I think think he's the only one to have like a major title for the team league GSTL. He was the guy carrying them first of all. He came over and won an MLG. He's won GSLs. I'm just shocked. Like, for this to happen to MMA, who he is the face of Slayers. Like, nobody can deny that. It must have been something super serious that went wrong. And I'm just confused.
Yeah, I know nothing about it. I don't have any insider information at all. And I share the sentiments of my comrades here. Like, it's really shocking and disappointing. The Coca thing was really public, so we all kind of were able to follow that and understand the logic. And since then, he's moved back into the house, and it doesn't seem like there was hard feelings. With this, you don't get that sense. Like, immediately what comes out is that MMA wants to join a foreigner team. Being demoted and removed from the house like this seems like a severe punishment, so it's probably not that he, like, left the apple juice on the counter and they're just, like, screwing him over. It's probably something really severe, so I'm with everybody else. I want to see what happens. I'm kind of worried.
And that's the thing. Nobody knows what it is that he's actually done. Like, could it be something really minimal, or could he have just said, like, he wanted to join a foreign team? Like, nobody has any idea, like, what went on.
For him to publicly say that he wants to have his contract and he wants to go to a foreign team, I would imagine it has to be pretty bad. But Korean teams, for the most part, like, the players are expected to be entirely submissive, and it's not as bad as the KESP 1 teams were about that. But if there was something that set him off and he felt entitled to something because he was the team's superstar, he is the super, like, the one who's really, really accomplished amongst the team, he is the face of the team, and he felt some entitlement there, and that pissed off the Slayers management. They expected him to just, you know his place and act like a normal Korean player. I could see it, like, spiraling out of control from a relatively small thing, but it seems like it is a major deal. Like, it almost has to be something big.
That's the only thing that makes sense, like, that things just spiraled out of control. But yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. It's a huge, like, if it is to happen that he has to leave, like, it's such a huge loss. I mean, anybody losing their superstar in the face of their team, I mean, like, for example, if EG lost Idra, like, you know, it's huge. It's huge. And MMA, he's such a nice guy, and Slayers is such a likable team.
I don't know about that. I think we'd recover pretty okay. And
well, yeah, we'd be fine.
Like, we have to figure, like,
that wanker.
Get Stefano or something like that.
Barristan doesn't like that. Barristan defends me.
Barrison's scared of everything.
You know, I know that a lot of people trying to get a little bit more information out of it. Certainly, it would be interesting to see, MMA actually go to a foreign team. But again, a topic we've discussed before, as it becomes a little bit more lucrative to possibly join a Western team, get access to more tournaments, you know, maybe even not have to worry about your military duty for a little while longer. I suppose there's actually a lot of reasons that could go in, but speculation is all we can really do at this point. Thought it was probably worth bringing up, however. On the plate, in addition to that, if you haven't seen the Brood War matches, I think a lot of people were looking forward to this one, Flash versus Fantasy. Are you guys all aware of the results?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want any spoilers and have anyone freak out on me. But Flash goes down to Fantasy 3-0, and a lot of people were kind of hoping to see Flash go on one more. I'm not as up on it as maybe you guys still are today. But did anyone want to make any comments about Fantasy's performance over Flash?
I didn't watch the game.
No, I didn't see the games either.
It's cool we have a Fantasy.
Shit happens, Weed.
Yeah, I guess
Fantasy
so.
Flash, they're both Terrans. I don't know, man.
There you go.
I'm kind of sad about it, because I feel Flash should win the last one, because he's the best StarCraft player of all time. It'd be really cool for him to forever own the OSL SC1 title. Fantasy's pretty good, too.
He is pretty good.
It's funny that, like, 2 years later, when we've removed ourselves from Brood War, we're still hearing the same names. So I think that's awesome. Like Fantasy Flash, those were the big Terrans back in the day, for me as well. So they've been good, man.
They have been good. And will they bring it? I don't know. Maybe his excuse is he was playing too much StarCraft 2. Yeah. The TSL 4 qualifiers have finished up now, and we now have a solid list of now qualified players through both the competitions and also the who got the points. But it was pretty Terran light until the qualification points came in, where Terran seemed to stack a few more. But I am really excited for the overall competition. You know, TSL 3 was phenomenal. A little bit of history there. We talked about it before on the show. But anyone else excited for the upcoming TSL 4? Not all at once.
It's an online tournament.
Yeah.
It's all cross-server. It doesn't matter.
I'll tell you what. There was a time and day when TSL was the fucking tournament. Like, it was the creme de la creme. It was an absolute accomplishment just to qualify for the opening rounds of it. Everyone was like shocked and awed by the production because it was put on by little old Team Liquid. Like, it was pretty cool. It was revolutionary stuff. And I like that they're still doing it. Like, online tournaments still have a place, obviously. But I feel a little bit sad because the storyline throughout the entire thing is hampered by the lack of cross-server. I mean, the cross-server play hurts it, and that's not Team Liquid's fault at all. That's just kind of the way it goes. And with the qualification process going on right now, you saw a lot of Terrans not get in just because of the way the metagame is right now, and a lot of Zergs did. So it's kind of hampered that way, and it seems like, I don't know, it seems a little underwhelming, I guess.
I had no idea, or I had like little idea that it was going on, but I didn't feel like there was any, there was probably streams anywhere, but it didn't really pull my attention. Like, I didn't hear much about it.
Let me ask you this. You guys watch season 3 much?
I mean, sure. I watched it
at the IPL offices. I watched their whole thing because we were doing a photo shoot that weekend, and it was awesome.
Yeah, I watched a lot of it too.
But it was clear, like, all the Koreans died in the first two rounds. Like,
right.
Lag back then was a real big deal. I think everyone's kind of gotten better about it. It's not nearly as big of a deal, but it's still a problem. But it was fun. I mean, they've got great commentators, a good prize pool. Team Liquid does do good production with online stuff. It's not quite like the IPL crew or anything like that. It's not going to, you know, absolutely floor you, but it's good enough, I think.
Well, it's going to be starting up here, I believe, not this weekend, but the following weekend. So if you're interested, of course, teamliquid.net is the place to check that out. But some of the qualification and the way it came down to the points was pretty cool. Obviously, people rewarded for continuously coming out and attempting to qualify. And some interesting names in there as well. So, I mean, Idra, you bring up the point. It is an online tournament, you know. It is an online tournament that gave Naniwa and Thorzane kind of a launch pad, which is a good thing to come out of it. People would probably argue the exact same thing about TSL 3 based off the results that Jeff just mentioned. So, you know, obviously casting it, so I've got some vested interest in it. But with the player list, I think it might actually turn out to yield some interesting games, online or not. So the other thing to talk about before we open up the phone lines was the MLG Summer Arena. And that's coming up this weekend. It is going back to that 32-man format that the original arena saw, which meant that that studio is going to be jam-packed with an absolute just ridiculous amount of people. I'm not sure if, I'm pretty sure a couple of you guys experienced that. Do you guys remember that first 32-man arena?
Yeah, both me and Ben were there.
Yeah, okay.
So a lot of people in that little office.
It was pretty insane, and there's definitely no lack of players this weekend for the competition. Alicia, Puma, Stefano, Sase, Gonzi, Oz, Alive, and Grubby all making it through the Spring Championship. Then you have players from the Korean qualifier, including like Losira, Revival, Hero. Tasia is in there, Ryung, North American qualifier, Illusion, QXC, Golden, Violet, Chess, Sasquatch, and then the European qualifier, which has some of the names we saw at DreamHack, as well as some names that have been recently making an appearance online. But some people have been saying, well, this isn't Korean top heavy, which I was surprised to hear people say that, because I feel like a month ago I was hearing, why is every tournament Korean top heavy? I don't know what you guys think about Summer Arena, but kicking off another leg of MLG's 2012 year.
It's always great. They're moving to that new model where it's free, so everyone's going to get to watch. I think they're going to enjoy a bigger audience. I like the European list of players. I really do. I think there's
they had something happen like Tefl qualified and Grubby is now in because somebody dropped out. Leenok, I think.
I think that's accurate.
So it's got a really cool list of Europeans. There's some Americans getting a shot that in the past we haven't seen. I think one of the things that kind of hampers the experience for me is that their qualification process was really poor. There was something like 19 players that tried out for the European one, or yeah, it's some number like that, and like 8 qualified or something. So that's a fucking dream qualification process.
That sounds like a pretty dream.
That's pretty good. And then the Korean one had something, had comparable numbers, if not less, maybe a little bit more. And then the American one had 64 players in it or something like that, but the fewest were to qualify. And even with the biggest qualifier, I think Sasquatch got 2 or 3 walkovers.
Yeah, he got 2 walkovers right away, and he had to beat Binsky and Trimaster to actually get that spot. So, yeah, I haven't paid too much attention to it. I was unfortunately on my way to DreamHack, or not DreamHack, Home Story Cup when the qualifications were played, so I didn't get to participate, and that kind of ruined my interest in it. But yeah, I don't know how they have so few people trying to qualify in Europe and Korea. It's such a big tournament. They really have to be messing something up with how they're promoting it and advertising to players. And then of course the seeding process. Like, I don't know how that happens. How you have to get mediocre players to get a spot.
Most of the qualifiers happen when major tournaments are going on. I mean, I've already spoke to like 10 people, literally that number, where they couldn't play in the qualifiers because they were going to a tournament or at a tournament. So it's just really messy. Like when they're hosting the qualifiers.
I also asked, like, at Homestory Cup, I asked a lot of the Europeans, you know, how come the turnout for that is so poor, and to a T, none of them necessarily listed that they weren't aware of it. That wasn't what they said. Most of them actually said, with DreamHack having a long tour, with IEM coming up, and with the various other European tournaments, they actually feel like they don't feel the need to travel to the United States to play a tournament like this. And some of the stuff they talked about, too, is that because there's so many Koreans at these tournaments, it's really hard for their teams to justify the travel budget. Like, yes, they do get a nice stipend to travel, but it usually does not cover the entire thing. And time away from their training, but also jet lag, etc., it makes it a really hard tournament for them to consider, because unless you go and you really have it in your mind that you're a top 3 finisher or you're able to make a really cool storyline, they feel like it's too taxing, and it doesn't justify missing out on what else they could be doing. So I don't know if that's an interesting hurdle that I think MLG will have to either just come to peace with or maybe address on some level. I'm not sure what they want to do with it.
We're going to get a taste of it. We've got kind of an interesting format because they've also made a few other changes. I don't know if you guys have taken a look at the bracket, but let me bring it back up. Because the way it works is it's separated into 2 different brackets, and that ultimately takes you to the championship bracket, I guess you could call it. So separated into almost sort of 2 NASL double elimination brackets, and then down below the 2 grand finalists play. What do you guys think about that? Definitely, that was not how Arena 1 went, unless I'm smoking crack, was it?
It's just a way for them to trick people into being okay with a more exciting but less fair finals. Like, you can have someone who goes through and wins their bracket but loses a match, and then someone who goes through the other bracket without losing a match, and then they play in the finals on an even footing. And now viewers are like, oh, that's okay, they're separate tournaments, and this is the overall finals. But it's the exact same thing as, you know, playing a normal tournament and having it be double a limb, but not having the loser bracket player have a disadvantage in the finals. So, like, it's a good thing, but it's just tricking the audience.
It could end up working out pretty poorly. I like it, though. I think it's the most long-winded way of saying that we're not doing Extended Series. Am I wrong? Like,
no, I think Extended Series is in full effect for this.
But per bracket, right? Twice as much?
Oh, well, it has to be. Yeah, Extended Series are in use, according to Liquipedia.
4 days.
Con! I'm excited. It's going to be great games. I can't wait to watch. I unfortunately was casting the Masters Cup during the time when... Because, guys, I qualified through the first qualifier and had a chance in the invite, but I couldn't play it. Very sad.
I'm sorry to hear that. We will talk about it a little bit more. I think we're interviewing one of the MLG guys tomorrow on Live on 3 to discuss a little bit about the pay-per-view and how they've changed the model a little bit. So if you're interested in that side of it, come on over, and maybe we'll get some of those questions answered. That'll be on this weekend. Yeah?
It's me fluffing my hands.
Really?
Fluffing it up.
I'm pretty curious. I'm pretty curious. I want to know if the monies were there. I think it's probably the sponsor.
I need to get Sir Scoots yelling his fucking brains out at Sundance, or else, like...
I don't think it's going to be Sundance.
I would settle for him yelling at whoever's on.
He probably will. He probably will. Are we ready for Idris' favorite part of the night?
Yeah!
Boy.
All right. I hope we get a lot of questions for the Muslim tonight. All right, we're going to open up the phone lines. The Muslim, I know you've been subject to this before. I'm pretty sure. You could Skype us at DJ Leader, telephone 909-581-8519.
Oh, yeah, I got trolled last time by that guy that was like, where did you come in the
Oh,
like,
yeah,
arena?
That was that episode, yeah. Actually, he was being passive-aggressive, but he wasn't meaning to be, and it was all a big misunderstanding or something, and I went off on him or something.
That was really stressful.
Anyway.
Oh, that whole thing, that ended up being boring.
Yeah, yeah. Let's take the first call. We're going to take area code 304. Welcome to Inside the Game. Hello.
Hi.
Hi there. What's your question?
So I was wondering, this is kind of an old question, actually, but back whenever Home Story Cup was going on, there was a lot of controversy, but talk about how, like, players were getting in trouble with their teams because, like, there was a lot of drinking there, like, well, outside the tournament or whatever. And I know, like, the Good Studio was talking about how, like, Bling got drunk on stream, and Dignitas was, like, yelling at him about this. So I was wondering, like, I mean, well, Idra and In Control, you guys are both there. How do you guys feel about that? Because I know, like, Newman from Dignitas was saying that was kind of, like, a distracting factor for them. Like, they'd be less apt to send players to the tournament since that happened. So what's your guys' take on that?
Until Greg and I have a tournament where we go out and we get matching tattoos, like a Playboy bunny rabbit tramp stamp or something like that, I don't think we're in the same boat. Like, Bling's in a kind of special position in the sense that there's kind of this public opinion, there's like this public image that when he goes to tournaments, he's a great player to watch, but he's also going to get smashed and he's going to get into trouble with Stefano. And while Stefano wasn't there, Dignitas is still pretty worried about, and I'm speaking for them, so this very well could be like, they could tweet right now, that bloke In Control is so fucking wrong, and I'd have to accept it because I'm speaking on their behalf. But I feel like they want to work away from that because Bling's still a young player with a lot of potential, and I think he's got a bright future ahead of him. So at Home Story Cup, there's definitely the temptation to kind of goof around that way, so they're watching for that. But I don't think it was like a zero tolerance thing where, like, the second they found out that Bling was imbibing and having a good time, they were like up in arms about it. They just didn't want to have him on stream drooling and slurring through a cast or something like that.
People drink, believe it or not, it happens.
Particularly at Home Story Cup, that's like part of the atmosphere. Everyone's hanging out and relaxing. There's plenty of alcohol in the place. And it's up to the players to make sure it doesn't affect our performance. But then everyone also kind of expects us to be at least tipsy on stream, and you get a more relaxed, more friendly environment. And that's part of the reason a lot of people like it more than other tournaments.
Like, right from Home Story Cup 1, one of the things was there was, like, four people live at the event, and pretty much in the games you were, like, drinking bottles of Corona or whatever on camera. Like, that was part of the thing. So, yeah, I mean, as long as it's in moderation and stuff and people don't go crazy and it looks really daft or whatever, then I don't think it's too bad.
Yeah, I mean, EG is really, 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 really professional, and they very much so take care and worry about how players conduct themselves at tournaments. It's like a big part of our contracts, but I think there's a certain amount of trust there too. Like, I start off with that joke about getting tattoos, but I'm pretty serious about that. You don't hear about an EG player getting pissed drunk and then making huge mistakes because there's consequences for that. So I think that's something that Dignitas is trying to get towards.
All right, caller, thank you very much. Let's take our next caller. We have got, let's take, this might make the Muslim feel a bit at home. Let's take Joe's call. Hello, Joe. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a question for you, the mightiest ferret, DJ Wheat.
What?
If you were to travel to an island, which of EG, out of the Muslim, Idra, and In Control, would you send off to live happily ever after?
Wait.
Which one would you kill, and which one would you live on an island with?
I don't feel comfortable answering this.
Total fluff.
I don't feel like I'm comfortable.
You know what? Non-corporate Wheat would have answered that.
Well, you know what? Okay, fine. If you really want...
Can't be Wheat. I'm okay with... I've lived longest of all three of them.
If you want... Okay, I will. Fine. I'm killing In Control. Wait, I'm sending someone off to an island and I'm marrying one?
No,
you're living. You're living with one.
And one, you kill one,
and you're saving one.
To be happy.
I don't get what the third person does. I kill one. I'm on an island.
They go back. You don't need all the answers, okay? Like
they just get to go live there. Well, obviously, okay. Yeah. So I kill In Control. In Control, boom, you're dead.
Hang on though.
Like you said,
here's how it happens. Sabretooth Tiger happens to occupy the island at the same time. How this happens, we don't know. There's probably some kind of weird.
DNA,
or in time, or like it's been untouched. It's not really entirely sure. It could be a smoke monster, but I end up biting. I grab both of its tusks and I break them off and I'm stabbing him with it. But the whole time it's clawing me. So it's like this epic struggle between what could be a representation of evil, and then you have me, which I'll leave it up to your imagination. But obviously, good. We're stabbing each other, but through the mortality of my own like sacrifice, I end up dying, and then you guys nourish yourselves off my bone marrow and blood for like weeks on end and survive even longer.
That's exactly how I pictured it in my head. So you're dead In Control, thanks to the Sabretooth Tigers. Idra, I'm going to go ahead and let you return back, because if I have to stay on the island, obviously I have to choose, the boyish-looking one, just in case I get lonely. I need someone to cuddle with at night. So there's the no-fluff answer. Like, I don't...
It's because Britain's the best.
Everyone knows what I'm talking about, so...
We've actually seen Ben shave. He would make quite the...
He's quite attractive.
If you put a skirt on him.
Oh,
gosh.
All right, sorry. All right, Joe, hopefully that answered your question. Peace.
I love it.
All right. Holy shit. All right. I think Barbara called in before, and we thought Barbara was going to be a troll. And then Barbara actually ended up answering or asking a really good question. So I'm going for 2 for 2 here. Barbara, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Good evening. Hi.
Good evening. Hello.
Hi. I have a Zerg question, a ZVZ question.
Okay. Fire.
So I saw both of Starlet series versus of Stoji. So I saw all 5 games, and in 3 of them, she turtled on 2 and then 3 bases with just spine crawlers and infestors, and she skipped roaches entirely. She went for like a 14-minute hive with Ultralisks. In fact, the only game she lost the entire weekend, she got Nidus right before her Ultras were ready. So my question, I suppose, to Idra... Is this, like, a thing now? Is this her go-to DVD build or something she just prepared against him? Are people doing this? Are they going to start doing this? Or do you think it's going to be figured out pretty quickly?
She does Roachless CVZ a lot. Quite a few Zergs do. It's a really, really strong style, unless you know it's coming pretty early on. Roach Baneling all-in can be incredibly powerful for a set, either, like, the initial one or a later Roach, like, Speed Roach Speed Bane all-in that's really unique but is just a hard counter build to Roachless play. And then if you realize it early on and you just decide to take a faster and get a good economy up, because as long as you deny the links, you don't take any damage from anything. And then you have either a big +2 roach timing or a timing with Burrow, or you can go roach Hydra drops. But just like you said, a Nidus right before Ultras, that's the one way she lost. It's vulnerable to a lot of timings like that, as long as you're in good shape early game. The biggest thing is just it's kind of hard to recognize in time to actually react to it. And a lot of the time, the +1 Carapace Lings can do enough damage. Like, if you take any damage at all playing against it, then you just lose. Because it's really easy to turtle up and go Ultra. And once you have Ultra, Zerg units don't kill Ultras. So, it's like a slippery slope kind of thing. If you do everything perfectly, then you should kill them right before Hive comes out. But if anything goes wrong, then the fast Hive player just kind of wins.
All right, excellent. Do you think we're going to be seeing a lot more of that?
Yes, for a while, and then it'll get really popular, and people get really good at recognizing it and figure out the exact timings to punish it, and it'll become kind of an obscure build again.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Appreciate it.
The fuck? These are all amazing questions.
There's some good ones coming in, man. Let's keep going. This time we've got Derek on the line. Hello, Derek. Welcome to Inside the Game. You're breaking my heart, Derek.
Never forget the day we went like 3 for 3, though.
God. We were so close, guys. Derek, pick up the phone, put your penis down, and talk to us, okay? Shit. All right, Derek. I'm giving that a very bad. I rated it 1 star on Skype. We're taking our next one. We got Paul Mann on the line. Hello, Paul Mann. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hi.
What's up?
Hello. I was at NASL this weekend in Toronto. I flew in from Vancouver.
What are you? Are you being attacked right now?
I feel like he's falling down.
No, I'm trying to
like
find a quiet place in the room.
Okay. I thought maybe a bunch of typewriters came alive. They started chasing after you after growing legs. And all right.
I'm actually just really surprised I'm on the show. I was going to come on and say, "Oh yeah, how are you doing? In control?"
I'm sorry that we didn't get to experience that in real life. So you're at NASL. Did you enjoy it then as a live spectator?
Yes, I flew in from Vancouver, actually. And I was surprised at how close I was able to get to all the casters and everything. It was a great experience and really proud of the Canadian crowd. We even broke into singing "O Canada" on day 2. So it was a little bit of a dream come true.
As a Canadian, do you think you probably would have wet your pants if Huck would have won?
I think half of us already wet our pants when he was coming down the red carpet, draped in the Canadian flag and everything.
So that was kind of it for it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little sad to see him go out as quickly as he did, but I hope he knows that us Canadians, our hearts are still behind him and looking forward to great things from him in the future.
Sure.
He'll be back, man. I mean, one of the severe advantages of Huck is with that low center of gravity, he gets right back up every time.
As a 5'4" Asian myself, I know all about that low center of gravity. Gotta watch out for us. Sometimes we come in at the knees. Ready.
So you got a question for the guys?
Derek, yes, I do. I'm just curious. I didn't have time to come up with a super epic one, but they were mentioning at the NASL that, you know, there might be a chance they would come back to Canada. And I'm wondering, what do you think would be the odds of us seeing either NASL or a major tournament come to Vancouver, maybe on the West Coast? Do you think that would be a good thing?
So, like, Vancouver? Yeah, I mean, I don't know, like, I don't know how this works, but everyone was watching, and I really do think that an MLG is likely to happen, and Toronto's really close to New York, so maybe there's something to be said about that. But I hope so. I mean, no, it's only been a couple days, so, you know, nobody has, you know, Sundance is going to, like, tweet, "Plans 2013 Toronto. It's going to be at the CN Tower.
Winter Arena."
Are you sure he hasn't already?
Oh my God! You set up the computers at the top of the CN Tower, and you have to play while suspended from fucking outer space.
I like it.
It's extreme StarCraft.
Yeah, the
best idea ever to have been made.
Big selling point for Vancouver, I think, is we may have the largest population in North America. Definitely a lot of Asians of all sorts here.
Are you being racist right now?
No, I'm Chinese myself. We have tons of Koreans.
I'm just playing around anyway, man. No, yeah. I think, I mean, Vancouver in terms of locations to visit to have a competitive gaming event is absolutely got to be at the top of the list for some people. If you want some success like what it was shown in Toronto, I think Vancouver would be a good shot for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just want to say, glad to finally meet Idra and In Control on the last night at the bar. I didn't have time to talk with them because they were chilling with Scarlett, but hope you enjoyed my Canadian flags from the dollar store that I had custom made for you guys.
Those are cool.
No, now you know who Paul Mann
is. Man. I do know who he is.
All right, thanks, Paul Mann. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. All right. Care, guys.
Meanwhile, the Muslims like, dude, why don't they have more competitions in the UK?
UK was pretty good. Like, WCS really surprised me.
Yeah, in like a good way, I take it.
In a really good way. We had, like, for a UK event, it was absolutely crowded. It helped having Tastosis there. But yeah, I mean, there wasn't enough space in the venue. They had to open up, like, another room in the venue. And the UK audience was really amazing. And I think they peaked at, like, 28,000 viewers.
Nice.
So yeah, it was really cool seeing the UK, rousal up for WCS and such.
Let's take another one. This is always an interesting area code. I cannot tell you why, but we're going for it. We got area code 949. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Jesus Christ, man. How many people in this fucking world don't know how to operate their goddamn phone? Hello?
Oh!
Hello?
Hello. I was wondering if you think that the Proton or the Zerg claims of being overpowered and the Terran being underpowered, do you think that that is in leagues lower than Master? Or do you think that that is apparent in all of the leagues?
Can I go for this one first?
Please, the Muslim.
I think it's apparent in all leagues. The main reason is it makes it easier to play for Zergs. At the highest level, it's obviously still going to be really freaking hard, so the difference there isn't like the biggest thing ever. It's still obviously there. But at the lower leagues, if you have six queens, that's really cool. And I think like I started playing Zerg quite a bit in ladder, and I started doing pretty well. And I just realized it's very easy to transition into playing. So I think it's apparent in all leagues.
Terran's always done relatively poorly in the lower leagues, so I imagine it just exacerbates it.
In control.
I just like the word exacerbate.
All right, thank you, caller. Appreciate it. Hopefully you're not experiencing that in the lower leagues. Are you a Terran?
No, I'm Zerg.
Okay, so
videos.
How is it in your league?
In my league, I'm winning more than 50% of my games.
How many of those are just people who leave because you're Zerg?
I've actually had about 5 people this month leave.
Yeah, it happens for real. All right. Thank you very much, caller. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. We'll take this one. Area code 760, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's your question?
Hey, guys. I had a question more about, like, the physical side of the pro gaming. Because, I mean, you always hear about people getting injured from too much computer work, more of, like, you know, the job side of the world. And how do you guys play for 8 hours in a row, 9 hours in a row in the day and not get injured? Do you guys, like, run and keep yourself in shape? Because I just, like, I don't get it. Like, I know you guys are young in your 20s and stuff, so your bodies work a lot better, but like, how does that work?
Just for reference, how old are you,
this
caller?
This is a great question for the Muslim.
Excuse me?
Sorry, I was saying, just for the record, how old are you, caller?
Oh, I'm 20.
Okay. Okay.
What the shit?
Calling you all young
guys.
And
you know how it works, man. We wake up every day stronger and more vital than the day before because that's the way the world is rewarding us. No, actually, EG has a pretty good commitment to physical fitness and diet stuff. Like, Machine actually works out more than everyone here, and we all just try to kind of keep up. But every day we go out to the gym just about. Machine and Idril run. DeMuslim swims. Jake has the metabolism of a Vietnam village. He actually just kind of... there's actually no explanation for it. He eats Cajun food all day long and still remains pretty svelte. And then, I mean, on the flip side, too, let's talk about this. There's some pretty attractive girls in the house. We have to remain in optimal physical form just to remain relevant. And a lot of people joke that the girls are a distraction, but honestly, they're motivation. When I wake up and I look over and see the beautiful women, I think to myself, what am I doing about not looking like an idiot sitting next to him? So that's something we work on pretty regularly. I have a bulldog named Barrison. He actually runs more than everybody in the house. That's intimidating. If your bulldog's in better shape than you are, you're up shit creek, man. You're up shit creek without a paddle.
I'm asking this question because I was actually since beta playing and trying to get into the competitive scene, and I actually overdid it, and I have an arm injury now. I don't know how it happened, but it's like a TLO type repetitive stress injury, and yeah. I've been trying to recover from it, and I was playing 9 hours a day plus full school workload in college, and just too much, but I'm trying to recover from it and trying to figure out like ergonomics. I don't know how
I had the same problem, man. Like, I was focusing too much on having a six-pack, and it got to the point where I was worried about it becoming a 12-pack or 24, and then I didn't want to know where it was going to go from there. The numbers kept doubling. So I actually went back onto a one-pack, and since then I found not only the happiness of my StarCraft life, but my physical life has found a great balance. The equilibrium is wonderful.
Just out of curiosity, Cole, did you just, like, experience pain when you were playing and went to the doctor, and they were like, you know, what do? Masturbate all day or play computer games? Can you explain to me exactly how this goes down?
If you play Diablo 3, you can actually combine the two. You can click on your dick and the game at the same time.
Go ahead.
Okay, aside from the trolling, I actually, I don't know, I was playing like 9 hours a day, and I was like, when I got to like the higher Master League, I was getting like kind of nervous, like a little edgy, because I was trying to play at like 200 APM, the higher APMs, and I would get, I tense up a lot when I played, so I think that's what caused a lot of the injury when I was playing, and I got pain, and I went to the doctor, and he told me that, you know, just cool down a little bit, don't play as much, and it'll get better, and it never did, and then it turned into like a TLO type thing. I mean, I'm not a pro, so I don't want to like compare myself, but I don't know what happened, like my muscles now just don't, they tighten up a lot, and I get inflamed, and I can't play anymore, so I was just wondering if any of you guys had that before and recovered from it, or have any tips, but obviously you guys are just, you know, full pack.
I have tips, and I, like, spent months and months not playing. It wasn't down to, like, carpal tunnel or anything, but I do have, like, some wrist pains now and then, just purely because I had, like, very little muscle in my right arm after I had my injuries. The best thing you can do is take a big break. And I just mean a real break, like not playing for weeks and weeks. This time, obviously, motivation will build up and stuff, and you'll really want to play. But treat that as a really good thing for when you do come back. Also, having like lots of sleep. Your body needs to regen. Eating the right stuff, like protein, whatever, for your body to like recuperate. Like, just having a break, most of all. Don't think you're missing out on anything. Just realize that this motivation is building up, building up, building up. Like a wine bottle ready to blow, if anything. So when you do come back, you come back
wine
strong.
Bottles work like that, Ben.
It does. It comes back. Like, but anyway, yeah, you just need to rest. Your body needs to rest. Like, that's the main thing. And also, actually, just working out a little bit helps. And wrist exercises. Like, you see a lot of players doing, like, the wrist motions and things like that, a lot of people forget. And if you are trying to play, like, 9 hours per day, that's a shit ton. Like, I recommend really starting off with a way fewer amount of hours. But watching a lot of replays, that's one thing that you should be doing anyways, watching a lot of replays. So just using your time better. But also, don't worry about having, like, a billion APM. One of the things I recently realized from hanging out with a lot of Koreans and bootcamping with them is calm hands, and it's about trying to be perfect rather than trying to be fast, and that helps a lot too with muscle strain.
Oh, is that what you guys were tweeting the whole fucking time? You kept saying calm hands?
Yeah. I was playing next to Ryan, Clyde, and Dream, and like we're all playing together and stuff, and they were all like reasonably slow, but then they were telling me why they were slow, and it was just like, yeah, calm hands. Like, better to be perfect than to be fast, and I was like, okay, that makes sense. And that's something that I've tried to, like, calm down myself to.
I think what Muslim says has a lot of validity, but I think you could also go the exact opposite direction. Play through the pain. Play faster. Frantic hands is something that a lot of people say. Just, you know, I mean, if this were a sport, would you stop the first time you lose your breath? Would you, you know, are you the kind of guy that quits on his team when a little bit of pain starts happening?
Carpal tunnel's the kind of thing that can, like, really fuck up massively.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually have carpal tunnel on my right wrist.
It's just the first barrier to excellence, man. You know what people say.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks, guys. I appreciate Jamuzlim. I appreciate your tips. Thanks in control for the trolling. Pretty awesome. And thanks for the call, accepting my call, guys.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Man.
Take care. Not you know, that was a classy caller right there. You troll him a little bit. He's like, yeah, that's funny. Let's get to the real answer with Jamuzlim. Jamuzlim plays nice guy. He gives it to him. He thanks you for the trolling. Like, that's pretty nice.
It's been a great day of calls.
I'm worried, man. I've not yet seen Goatless call. I don't know if he's just
got time.
Pulling the old, you know. I know, but usually he's on top of his shit. I guess I'll – oh, there he is. See?
Well, One more, right?
He knows. Yeah, yeah. It's that one time you said how he always calls
I know. You're right. You're right. Now I'm just fucking with him. He's going to have to listen to that ring for a little while. We'll take another phone call here. We got area code 979 on the phone. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Yeah, I had a question. Has to do with the APM stuff, a lot like that last guy, and how it, I guess, a lot different through leagues, obviously, because of skill level. But I noticed when I play, I'm a Zerg, and I'm like High Masters myself, you know, 200, 220 APM, you know. And after the game, let's say I pair up Protoss, it'll pop up my APM on SC2 gears. They'll also have the Protoss's APM, and I notice I'm getting beat by these guys that have, like, 70 effective APM, and I'll be playing at, like, 160 effective APM. And, like, some of the games, I make dumb decisions, but y'all were talking about earlier how Zerg's maybe an easier race to play, and a Muslim said that when he was talking about how he was playing on ladder and stuff like that. But I just wanted to know, as far as the pros go, do Zergs typically have more APM and Toss usually less, or is it usually the same throughout all pros?
It's actually a pretty good question. You guys,
I don't know.
I think... From what I've seen, it's totally down to the person. I mean, the effective APM thing, Zergs can get the most, because there's quite a lot to do with creep spreading, overload spreading and stuff. Like, you see players like Golden, he's literally having, like, an epileptic fit on his keyboard and gets, like, 180 effective APM or whatever. But, yeah, I think it's pretty similar. Don't look at APM, like, especially effective APM as, like, hey, I've got, like, double this guy's, I should be winning. Like, a lot of the time, it's usually spam, even if it is effective APM. Like, it's all kind of bogus. I just really suggest calming down a little bit and just really thinking about, like, strategic decisions that you make rather than just how fast you are compared to this guy. Because this guy could probably be the same APM as you right now, but he's just being calm and making better decisions.
Yeah, I think Zerg might be highest because you have the most repetitive actions, like creep spreading and whatnot, and larva injects. But that's not really actually being faster. It's just there's more things we can do without thinking about it, and that adds up towards the APM.
All right. Caller, thank you very much for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Take care. All right. We could probably take one more, right?
Yeah.
One more before? Okay, let's...
They've all been good, so, I mean... And what about Princess, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes, Princess had a question for you. We'll do that. Let's see. Oh, can I call? Yes. Do you want to call and ask?
This is a call from Mexico, too. This might be the first time.
I think he might have moved to Dallas already.
Oh, shit. I was going to say, like, a Skype call from Mexico.
Princess?
Yeah.
History.
That is...
Major?
It's Juan.
Yeah, it's little Juan.
Yeah, little Juan.
Good job, Ben.
Juan.
He phones me, like, every day on Skype. It's really weird.
He does? Well, then he should know how to do it. He just sent me, I ask here. Call
no.
this.
All right. Let's get the next call while all you right. like translate to him what it means.
All right, No. Here he is. All right, we're blessed to have him on Inside the Game. Hello, we've got Princess, aka Major, aka whatever you want to call him. Many, many names, and you've got a question for In Control or Idra. I understand.
I have a question for Captain Gregory. Hola, Gregory. How are you,
Captain Gregory?
Okay.
Captain
My
Gregory.
Question is, do you think I'm going to win WCS North America, Greg?
No, I think Scarlett's going to beat you first round.
Why do you think that, Greg?
Just because that'd be the funniest thing that could happen.
Okay. That was my question.
What happens if you win?
What happens if I win?
Yeah.
Play on the ID and a processor?
No, I can play on the ID available if you want to.
No, play on a processor.
Tell
them what happens if you win on Anaprosser.
Yeah.
Oh, I will get a kiss from Anaprosser according to Control.
Yes.
That's what
you
he said.
You win on that name, and you have to give shout-outs to, like, her YouTube channel, maybe, or...
a real kiss?
What?
Like, a real big kiss on Major?
Yep. Probably, like, on the cheek, maybe the forehead.
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't know. She might be adventurous and go for the lips. It's really up in the air. I mean, if you win a major tournament... And you're on the name Anna Prosser. I'm leaving it to her. I've only sold her body as far as the kiss itself.
It's what happens to find out how far she wants to take it. Right.
Got the Latin thing, you know, the Latin suave thing. Maybe she can't resist herself. Who knows, man?
Yeah. Major,
Yeah.
I wish you luck.
Thank you.
I think we might see a kiss.
We might see a kiss.
We might see a kiss.
And Nitro is going to be angry because he hates me for whatever reason.
He loves you.
Greg, any comment on that?
I don't know what I'd do without Juan. He's like a major source of entertainment for me.
He just said major.
I love you too, Greg. See ya.
Thanks, Major. Bye. All right. Wow. That was all sorts of goodness in that call right there. We still have time for one. No, not really.
One more.
Know, okay. I'll take this call. We got Bo Stock on the line. Hello, Bo Stock. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Yo, thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
Just a quick question. With the kind of general stereotype of gaming and esports being kind of nerdy, if you will, do you think that's going to affect that kind of mainstream breakage for esports? And is there anything that we can do to help that?
Can I ask a question before we answer that real quick, though? Because that's a really good question.
Yeah, sure.
Ben, testing your power of British, where is his accent from?
Yeah.
What region of the fucking Isles?
Wait, speak a little more, please.
Hello. I don't know what to say.
Ask your question.
South.
Count
no,
to 10.
You guys, that's not how it works. You say south. You say like...
Oh, Portsmouth.
Essex.
Dang.
Is that close? Is that south?
It is south.
It's south, but it's not close to Portsmouth.
All right. See, that's what I wanted. Okay.
All right.
So you're asking about like the stereotypes of nerds and what people can do to fight against that, right?
Yeah, and do you think it's like hurting the scene in a big way, and how can that be stopped?
I think it kind of feeds into the major question that a lot of people talk about, which is can StarCraft or esports or gaming in general break into the mainstream? And I think one of the storylines that is holding it back is that for wide-scale appeal, they'd need to view professional players as something more than just a kid that's wasting their life, which is, I think, what a lot of people would think, is they would think, oh, okay, you play yeah. games for a living. Well, you've cheated the system, and you're putting your life on hold, you're skipping college, and you're... What you know, you're washing your dreams down the drain for 1 year of being a lazy bum. But when they kind of see that these guys actually are getting media trained and they're moving around the world and seeing different parts and they're competing physically, mentally, and emotionally, and it's like this huge, amazing competition. Once that story gets told, I think a lot more people start to come across the red line and start to see, oh, okay, this is actually an amazing competition. And that's why there's more people that watch StarCraft than actually play it. Because they value and respect what goes into it. So the more that story gets told, I think the closer we get to mainstream. So I think, I don't know if I'm not answering your question, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is your question gets to one of the barriers that we have. And the more like people just kind of link interviews and show competitions, and the more like an MLG does a better job of exposing players and the stories are told from Team Liquid and EG, that kind of thing, the documentaries come out, I think more people get roped in because they'll respect the game more.
Yeah, I think it's hard to add too much to what Jeff said. It's just like the necessary coolness is already there. Like what we do, it's not just a bunch of nerds sitting in a basement and then every once in a while going and playing in competition. It's just a matter of getting that out there. And I think the American public is ready for it now. I think gaming itself is mainstream enough that they're receptive to hearing the story. And then once you hear the story, then you see how cool it is. And so I think a lot of these documentaries that are coming out, all the exposure that Jeff talked about, it's happening. We don't really need to do anything besides keep promoting it, keep telling your friends about gaming, just expose people to it.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. All right, take care. Let's do our last caller here, and then we'll wrap up. From the land down under, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Goat Lust Inside the Game.
Oh, g'day, fellas. How are we?
I am good. I'll let them speak individually.
A different opening. I like it.
Yeah.
Get us on our toes.
We are great. We are great. How are you, sir? How are things?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad at
Excellent.
All. Yeah.
So, you got something good for us tonight?
Oh, well, look, it's not bad, but I'm not going to say it's the best shit ever.
Be like, I was sitting on my toilet, and I came up with the best fucking question. All right. Go ahead.
All right. So, anyhow, Reddit's been copping a bit of shit lately, as I'm sure you're aware, about all this witch hunting. And, I mean, they're trying to wrangle the community a little bit and change their ways down there. But I'm wondering, what you guys think of, like, this switch that's happened sort of since SC2 got released, where, you know, the whole scene was really centered on Team Liquid, and that was more or less, like, the go-to place for, like, any discussion, any sort of StarCraft-related stuff, I guess, besides, like, all that Gosu gamers and that. But I'm wondering how you think the, like, this big opening up of, like, the forum sort of discussion thing has affected the scene, because personally I feel like the StarCraft 2 community has come, like, it's come away from some of that Korean-centric sort of feel that they've always had on Team Liquid and stuff, and it's really brought it to be more global-focused sort of thing.
Sure. Does anyone want to tackle this?
What is the question?
I didn't really get that either.
Well,
go
ahead.
Yeah, like, how do you feel about the community's, just the changes that have happened since StarCraft 1 in, like, just discussion-wise and forum-wise?
Where Reddit is basically, it has devolved, if it ever was, as a sort of a single serving of StarCraft, right? Like, you can kind of just look through the page and see it versus some of the deep levels of discussion that originally started.
I think there's a lot of talking points on this. It's really fascinating. I'll just introduce a couple that I've talked about a few times that I think is kind of interesting. But we've talked about this as Brood War players. Like, the community was very, very small, and the community was pretty protective and very positive of its players because they were few and far between, and they had a lot of respect for them because the skill gap between observer and player was even larger than it is right now in StarCraft 2. Like, a lot of people that watch tournaments, sure, they're platinum or diamond, but if you ask them, maybe with a couple of beers in them, they're like, yeah, I could do what a grandmaster does. But in Brood War, they are, you know, they're D or like C minus, and they fucking laugh when anyone's like, do you think you could do what an A minus player does? They go, no, absolutely not. I think that's pretty interesting. I think it's interesting too that the larger the community gets, the more, and StarCraft 2 has this effect that Brood War didn't. Brood War players were Brood War players. They weren't, I mean, if you go far back enough, they were Warcraft 2 players gone Brood War players, I guess. There was a large part of the community that was that. But StarCraft 2 players are coming from WoW. They're coming from not necessarily first-person shooters nearly as much, but certainly Warcraft 3. Like, Warcraft 3 and StarCraft Brood War have really combined forces for this community, right? And I think that's a really, really interesting component and element because it's roping in a lot of, like, European constituents that we in the past did not have. A lot of people that were pure watchers of Warcraft 3 are now pure watchers of StarCraft 2. And they kind of bring in their sentiments to that. They have their homeboys. I feel like it's almost more nationalistic, not even touching on the Korean storyline, but rather like Germany versus United States, that kind of stuff. I'd be interested what you guys have to say, but those kind of stuff really fascinate me.
No, honestly, the only thing that's really relevant to me is the fact that the community grew so much and we gained so many people who are just honestly kind of annoying or self-important, or they're just, you know, the Brood War community was much more insular. Everyone knew everyone to some extent. Like, even on Team Liquid, random posters who weren't relevant to the competitive community, me and Jeff and any other pro who regularly posted there, we knew them just because it was a relatively small community that interacted a lot. And so there was a lot of good discussion there. I enjoyed participating in that. Then StarCraft 2 came and it blew up, and now it's just kind of like a cesspool, and I avoid it all. So I don't know. I'm not really qualified to comment on it. But the other aspect of it is the live community is now so much better just because there actually is one.
Yeah.
We had an audience and whatnot. But online, I just kind of try to avoid it. Or if I do interact with it, it's just making a bitter, angry post on TL.
You mentioned the witch hunt stuff, too. I mean, like, what do you think of that? You've been around gaming for a long time. Was that in Quake?
Dude, honestly, you know, like, let me tell a story from actually a Twitch perspective, because I always kind of feel this way, right? I mean, we are in this world, this day and age now, and specifically with the StarCraft community, some other communities have realized just how powerful they can actually be when they, you know, sort of form together and create these behemoths of action. And one thing is really funny, right? Like, I've done some research on, like, various video streaming services on the internet, right? It's part of my job to stay on top of things. And there is actually an alarming number of people who just can't watch YouTube videos. Not necessarily because it's in a country that's blocked or this or that. It's because they have an internet, or perhaps they have just bad quality of service that goes to YouTube because their ISP is, you know, podunk or ever. And you're like reading this, you're like, holy crap. Like, you'd think that these people would like band together. They'd go on slash whatever on Reddit and they would just bitch up a storm and get something done. But they don't, because as a collective, they aren't a community. And so every time I see these types of things and I see these quote-unquote collectives, it really makes me realize just how powerful this community actually is. Yeah. So inevitably, the pitchforking is going to happen. The problem that I have with it is that we take this single service idea almost to the point of literacy. And I joked at the beginning of the show that someone on Reddit posted something about, you know, hey, Inside the Game features these guys and DJ Wheat replaced Pain User. How many people will read that and take it away for just face value? You know, I don't know, maybe a couple, but it's just like a small example of what is consistently going on all the time. I think what is kind of interesting, to go back to the original question that you brought up, is that I feel like the discussion started out so strong early on because people were undoubtedly figuring out the game. But quickly, yes, discussion seemed to have a very hard time surviving because, yes, there was no way to validate the poster's, like, I guess, ability and or right to post on things. Like, what is stopping a bronze player from going in and just being like, no, this is how you handle this or this or this? And that is kind of counterproductive for anyone who's trying to join the discussion to learn something. And I don't know how you solve that or if anyone ever can solve that.
Yeah, in a big community, it's almost impossible, just because it used to be if someone posted stupid stuff, they would just get shut down. Everyone, like a bunch of relevant people, would realize that they were posting stupid stuff and just tell them to shut up or tell them that it was wrong, and then the discussion could go on. But now there's so many people, like the ratio of bronze people to grandmasters people is ridiculous, and now they're all involved, and there's even more people who don't even play the game at all and just watch, and even less knowledge, less experience, and a big percentage of those people, they just like to post bullshit, and there's too many of them to actually be hunted down.